Hi, I'm Koshin Chris Kane, abbot of the Puget Sound Zen Center on Vashon Island, Washington. We're glad to be able to bring you these podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about our Zen Center, please visit our website at pscc.org. Good morning. Please get out your texts. And there's three sections here. Ordinary mind is the way. Why don't we read them starting with you, Jikijitsu? Nice loud voice.
Mumonkan case 19, ordinary mind is the way. The case. Joshu earnestly asked Nansen, "What is the way?" Nansen answered, "The ordinary mind is the way." Joshu said, "Should I direct myself toward it or not?" Nansen replied, "If you try to turn toward it, you go against it." Joshu asked once more, "If I do not try to turn toward it, how can I know that it is the way?" Nansen answered, "The way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is delusion. Not knowing is a blank consciousness. When you have really reached the true way beyond all doubt, you will find it as vast and boundless as the great empty firmament. How can it be talked about on the level of right and wrong?" Upon hearing this, Joshu was awakened.
Mumon's comment. Nansen was asked a question by Joshu, and Nansen's face was shattered and melted away. He could not justify himself. Even though Joshu had come to realization, he will have to delve into it for another 30 years before he can realize it fully.
Mumon's poem. The spring flowers, the moon in autumn, the cool breezes of summer, the winter's snow. If idle concerns do not cloud your mind, this is your happiest season.
Thank you. I'll try to speak up myself. Well, this koan case, number 19, is an interaction between a teacher and a student from a long time ago, from the golden age of Zen, the Tang Dynasty. Probably this happened right around the year 800, this interaction. Nansen was an established teacher at that time, well known, and Joshu was just a young monk, young chicken monk, we used to call him. And he came from a long way to find Nansen, from all the way in the north of China down to the south. He'd been practicing with Nansen for a couple of years. He arrived when he was about 18, and this happens when he's 20, this awakening story. Joshu, of course, becomes a great teacher himself. More about that later. But his question is about this way that he is practicing. What is it? What is the way? What is the path? I sometimes get asked some variety of that question. What is Zen? By somebody who maybe doesn't know that much about it. Or what is this practice all about? Where is this practice going? And I do my best to answer, usually politely. And now and then I say what I really mean, which is give it time, you'll see. Give it time, sit, learn to be quiet, get to know yourself, get to know your no-self, and it will become clear. It will become clearer and clearer. That's the way I learned. I was given very little instruction when I was a young monk. Told to keep in step, and when to go to the bathroom, and when to eat, and everything else. But Zen will become clear over time. Nansen, he takes a different angle. He's got a different answer. He says ordinary mind is the way. I talked to my brother monk Shingen in Germany yesterday. He called from Berlin. And I said, yeah, I'm going to give a talk tomorrow on ordinary mind is the way. So he said, okay, so you're going to tell him that just not to practice, right? And I said, no, Shingen. And Shingen said, oh, I was only joking. When a German person tells you that you're being too serious, then you really know you're being too serious. There's a problem. German people have a good sense of humor. I was told once the joke by an Austrian who said, for German, the situation is serious but not hopeless. For an Austrian, the situation is hopeless, not serious. So that's supposed to tell you something about those national characters. Anyway, it made me realize, okay, this is obviously an issue for me, this ordinary mind. And I think it's because now and then I feel that the idea of ordinary gives people the impression that they can just be their regular old self. It kind of gives an out to practitioners, or can, you know, similar to just be yourself. And I'm here to say, you know, as back-assward as it sounds, that it takes time and effort to become ordinary. That the kind of ordinary that we're looking for is really ordinary, deeply ordinary. Ordinary mind is not our regular monkey mind. I guess that's what I want to say. One commentator, Shibayama Roshi, says ordinary mind literally means, I didn't get a chance to figure this out, how this can be true. He says literally means ordinary mind, the ordinary mind without discrimination. Okay, well now that's a different kind of ordinary mind, if that's true. That's a different kind of ordinary. It's a very, very ordinary. The most basic kind of mind, without any embellishments, plain. Can you be plain for a day? Undistinguished? So Nansen is saying something when he says ordinary. Maybe he's pointing toward this deeply ordinary. And yet he could have said, what is the way? The way is the mind beyond discrimination. He could have said that. But he chooses to say ordinary. And the point he's trying to make to Joshu is that it really is an ordinary part of you. That this aspect that we're after really is an ordinary aspect that you have. That it's your most ordinary self. The part that you were born with. A birthright of yours. You don't have to go anywhere outside yourself. And that imagining changes things. I think. Maybe that's what Nansen was trying to get across to Joshu. Can you hear okay? Yeah. So, the ability to become completely simple and calm, we all have that ability. It's just that kind of ordinary, we don't avail ourselves of as often as we could. I kind of imagine that maybe young Joshu, like young people, like me, when I was a young person, has an idea, you know, of what it is to be awakened, that that's something extraordinary. And that Nansen has to tell him, ordinary mind is the way. It's not something over there, over yonder. The literature, you know, says, Gate, gate, parasamgate, to the other shore, yonder, we're headed over there, go beyond, hallelujah. That's the end of the Heart Sutra. So there is that idea out there, and nonsense bringing us back. It's an ordinary part of yourself. Joshu says, okay, so how do I get there then? Give me some direction. Do I direct myself toward it or not? He's listening, Joshu, right? Because he's picked up that he says ordinary. Well, if it's ordinary, is it something I need to direct myself to? Do I need to work toward it or not? And Nansen, you know, he helps Joshu in a discursive way. This is a little bit unusual in the koans that we have. Often an old master would say, you know, 3 pounds of flax. If somebody asked him a question like, you know, what is the way? Or the oak tree in the garden right over there. That's the way. Something bringing you back to your direct experience. But Nansen, he's taking time with Joshu, and he actually explains. Later, you know, many centuries later, Zen Master Hakuin gets frustrated with this patience that Nansen shows with Joshu. He says, you know, you should have just given him a slap and bring him into the present. But Nansen says, and there are different ways to teach, you see, and Nansen says, listen, if you try to turn toward it, you'll go against it. If you turn toward it, you'll miss it. We have to learn to be subtle in this practice of ours. We have to bring our whole self to it, and we have to work subtly. It's a subtle practice. Turning toward it would be the usual way of discovering something. The usual way of working, you got a goal, you turn toward the goal, you attain the goal. This is different. And that's important to realize, this is different. We have to use different muscles. When I first went to Mount Baldy for the first time, Mount Baldy Zen Center, I was, I went to koan practice with Sasaki Roshi, went in, lasted about 10 seconds, maybe less, and the bell was rung and I was out. Okay? So I was a good student in college. I knew what to do. I just prepared a different answer and went in with that answer, corrected myself, and over and over and over again, 28 times, still 10 seconds or less, bell. Usually laughter. So what I learned from that was, okay, this is different. This is not your regular way of working, of attaining a goal. It feels to me like it's like, and I think this is true, it's like we generally work in two dimensions, and there's a third dimension that we have to learn. to use, to see, in order to do Zen practice. There's a different way to work. There's a different way to make effort. And this koan is about effort, really. It's about effort and direction. Aiken Roshi talks about when talking about this koan, says, there's a nice story where he's living in Kyoto and Soen Nakagawa is coming to visit this great Roshi. And he's looking forward so much to asking him some questions about Zen, and one question in particular. But anyway, he catches a cold and he can't go. So his wife goes instead. And he sends one question with her. Should I use effort or not? Similar, right? Should I use effort or not? And she comes back and she tells him all about everything and all about how great the Roshi was and this, that, and the other. And Aiken Roshi says, well, what about my question? Did you ask him my question? And she laughs and says, yeah, he said that is a very difficult question. That's a very difficult question. How do we use effort in this practice? So just know that it's a difficult question. This might seem weird, but I think it's important to start with a kind of faith. That's the way I was taught. When I first went to meet the Roshi, there's the kind of a ceremony that you do, and a paper is read by the head monk, and it starts, please start your practice. I thought it was so weird at the time. Please start your practice with a faith that you have Buddha nature. That's the way it begins. And that every flower, tree, and bird share that Buddha nature with you. And if you were to meet God and the devil, they would also have Buddha nature. Start with a faith that you have this Buddha nature. Faith that it's there. And see if you can envision, believe, that it's already you. That it's already there. And then you and I can lose things until we find that. We can become more and more plain, more and more ordinary, until that appears. Until so much so that you can't get any more basic. I think Nansen is saying that this practice, fundamentally, the effort that we make is dropping, rather than accumulating, rather than even turning toward. It's more dropping than it is picking up. It's more shedding than it is accumulating. So drop. Let go of. Michelangelo said, I saw an angel in the marble and carved away until I set it free. I went to Rome with my darling this fall, and we saw the statue of David in Florence. And, you know, I mean, that is beautiful. And Michelangelo knew how to set that free by taking away. He understood that it was taking away in order to find that. We also take away. Our angel is different. But when we take away, I don't think you should see too clearly that angel, but just feel that it's there. Just know that it's there. And when we take away and take away and take away, then it will show. Then it will show. And it's beautiful. It's really beautiful. It's a beautiful feeling. Right next to the David. Has anybody seen David? Raise your hand. Yeah, yeah. Do you remember the before you go to David, you pass the slaves? Do you remember those slaves?
Yes.
Yeah, Jean remembers the slaves. So the slaves are something special. What, explain the slaves.
Well, they're just, you know, people that have been tortured and, you know, are there in various murals and sculptures.
The special thing about the slaves is they're unfinished.
Oh, yes.
They're blocks of marble, and they're prisoners of the marble.
Yeah.
It's only partial. You only see parts of the body, and the rest is not done yet. They haven't been set free yet. They're still imprisoned by the marble.
Okay.
And it looks like they're maybe not done.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He forgot to finish, but he's finished.
Yeah, like studies is what I thought. You know, he
yeah.
has a lot.
Yeah, no, that was the idea. Those are the slaves. We're enslaved, you know, by our extra. And this practice is losing that extra. So it's losing that we're doing. We're becoming, and you know, that's a new thing for most of us, to lose. We like to win, to gather, you know, to become a loser. That doesn't feel right. We have to get over that, to really lose and know that there's an angel in there. But you'll only find it by losing. So, yeah, I do want to put a little pin in that, in this. I think it's a mistake, and I think it's a mistake that Nansen is pointing to. Don't feel like you know the destination. Don't feel like you know what that angel looks like. I think that's important. I felt that for a long time. just let your concerns go. Just die as completely as you can. Without having a clear picture about what, how you're going to resurrect, how you're going to be a better person, or even what that angel looks like. Just, you know, have the courage to drop without knowing that. And try not to think, I'll be a better person, or I'll be more compassionate, or I'll be friendlier. Or even I'll be more open. You can think that when you're later, you know, when you're studying Zen, when you're thinking about whether you should continue this path, whether you should become a member, whether you should do this, that, or the other. That's fine. But today, try not to do that. Just drop. Give yourself up and see what happens. That way it's pure. That way you're not going somewhere. That way you can experience, you're open to a range of experiences. Just drop. Don't add. Don't even add an idea of where you're going. We do this, you know, in a very ordered way, this Zen practice. Left, right, left, right. That's so you can fall apart. That's not so you can get used to order. That's so you can really let go. So I want to ask you really to let go if you can. I grew up in a Presbyterian church. You know, I sometimes say, my minister said, you know, God's frozen people. And there you just give a, baptism is just, you know, a little sprinkle of water. So that's the way I was baptized, with a sprinkle of water. I was kind of, growing up, you know, in the South, I was kind of intrigued by and maybe even jealous in a certain way of those Baptists, you know, who, when you get baptized, you go all the way down. You know, you got the water, you got to go underwater, and then you come up sputtering, or by the river, even better. You know, all the way down, you die, and then you're reborn. That's what that means. That's what that means. Not a sprinkle. So don't sprinkle in your practice. Drown. Go all the way down, if you can, full body. And then come up and see what comes up. So Joshu says, if I don't direct myself, all right? So Nonsense says, directing yourself is going to be tricky. If I don't direct myself, how will I know it? I've always been interested in this line. Well, not that line, but Nonsense answer. Because Joshu's question is on topic. It makes sense. But now Nonsense switches. He doesn't want to talk about the directing part so much. Now he hooks onto knowing. What does it mean to know? Somebody read me that. Yes. Yeah. Go ahead.
The way does not belong to knowing or not knowing. Knowing is a delusion. Not knowing is a blank consciousness.
That's right. So he says, maybe Joshua's problem is that he's after something. He's after knowing. And I think Joshu's problem is he's after something rather than nothing. I mean, again, this is subtle. We're all after something. That's why we're here. But in order to get something, you have to give everything up. You have to find nothing. I think subtly, Joshu wants to accumulate something, and Nonsense is telling him, it's about removing, it's not about adding. Nonsense said, it's not about knowing, it's not about not knowing. This path, you know, this path doesn't work in a way that we're used to. You have to know that. We all do. So, you know, I go in and I think I have an answer to a koan. As I said over and over and over again, trying something, trying this, trying that, nothing was working. And then I just went in and just sat still. I thought I'd try that. And then he said, no, that wasn't right either. Dead Zen. Ring. So, you know, it's not knowing and it's not not knowing. So Nonsense says, when you get there, when you get completely ordinary, you'll see it's not like knowing, and it's not like not knowing. The feeling is not like knowing, and the feeling is not like not knowing. It's not on that plane of knowing and not knowing. It's on a different axis. It's not stuck in those two dimensions. So he says it's vast and boundless, like the empty firmament. It's like the empty sky when you just become very, very ordinary. When you become very, very ordinary, you can just look up and see the sky like a child. There's a phrase I like from Rinzai, from Master Rinzai. He says, you can't drive a stake into the empty sky. Maybe that's what Joshu wanted to do. Maybe he wanted to plant his stake in the soil of that other shore. I'm there, put my flag down. That's two-dimensional thinking. It's actually about discovering, you know, again, like this plane It's discovering this axis here. It's discovering the sky, looking up. And you can't plant a stake there. You have to let go into that emptiness. You can't claim it. Leonard Cohen once wrote a poem, you know, when he lived with us. It was 97, so he was living with us. And it was called The Party Was Over Then, too. It was about the Communist Party, actually. But the end of it was fun. You know, it was poking fun at our bravado, effortful way of practicing Zen. I joined a tiny band of steel-jawed zealots who considered themselves the Marines of the spiritual world. This is the end of the poem, the very end. It's just a matter of time. We'll be landing this raft on the other shore. We'll be taking that beach on the other shore. Yeah, that doesn't work. Nonsense says you can't do that. So don't take that beach. Lose everything instead. Now that is work itself to shed, but it's a different kind of work. And then the sky appears. The sky will appear. Will open up. So that's the last thing that nonsense says. Finally, you can't think of it on the usual plane of right and wrong, this way or that way. You have to add a dimension, the dimension of neither right nor wrong. That's the sky's dimension. You and I can come back. We will come back to right and wrong. But for now, let's forget them. Let's forget them. Let's commit to forgetting that, to forgetting what's going to be good for us or bad for us. Let it all go, and then we can come back. I think the great poets intuit that there is this other way of being, that there is this vast sky that's beyond right and wrong. And they point to it sometimes. When I was thinking about this koan, you know, beyond right and wrong, this poem that I had memorized, that I liked so much, came to mind. It's by Robert Frost. It's very short. It's pretty short. It's called Acquainted with the Night. I have been one acquainted with the night. I have walked out in rain and back in rain. I have outwalked the farthest city light. I have looked down upon the saddest city lane. I have passed the watchman on his beat and dropped my eyes, unwilling to explain. I have stood still and stopped the sound of feet when far away an interrupted cry came over houses from another street. But not to call me back or to say goodbye. And further still, at an unearthly height, one luminary clock against the sky proclaimed the time was neither wrong nor right. I have been one acquainted with the night. I think the poets point to that, on that place at an unearthly height in which the time is neither wrong nor right. We all have that within ourselves. And if we can shed our everyday self, we can find our most ordinary self. So at that, Joshu was awakened. He was 20 years old, and he studied with Nansen for another 37 years until Nansen died. That would put Joshu at about 57. And at 57, older than I am, he started his journey. He just traveled around from sangha to sangha, meeting teacher after teacher, practicing, visiting other teachers. And finally at 80 years old, he found a temple, broken down temple, and Kuan Yin temple actually, and started teaching there. And he taught for 39 years. He lived to 119. And he was well known for pointing beyond. His most famous koan encounter was with a monk who said, "Does a dog have Buddha nature or not?" And he said, "Moo," which means no, but not that kind of no. No, you're looking in the wrong way. You're looking in the wrong direction, right or wrong, yes or no. No, it's beyond that. Look up. And how are you going to find that? Negate yourself. That kind of no. No, no, no. That, you do enough of that and you'll find it. But that's beyond yes and no. And when he was a teacher, he was a maverick. He upended conventions and taught a lot of women. Many of the stories with women are in the record of Joshu. When a high class guest would come to visit him, he'd just sit still and have him come in. And when a commoner would come, he'd jump up and he'd open the door for him. He was upside down. So on to the comment. So it says Nonsense Foundation was rocked. His base was shattered and melted away. Another commentary I read, had said that Nonsense shattered the base and melted away. At any rate, the idea is that I think that Nansen melted away. Nansen is pointing toward melting away. And even though Joshua would come to realization, he would need to delve into it for another 30 years before he can fully realize it. 30 years apparently is just means forever. So it's not just, it's like one of those idioms. We have a long and wonderful path in front of us. It'll never end. Always learning, always greeting new circumstances, which brings me to the verse. This is a well-known verse, and it's one of my favorites in the Mumenkan. I think it points to the result of practice. Without ourselves in the way, without our concerns, our idle concerns, this season, whatever it is a good season. We all have many seasons in our lives. Whether the seasons are seen as the stages of life or difficult periods and wonderful periods, good moods and bad moods, some are brighter and some are rainier. And these matter to us, these seasons. We want to have happy seasons if we can. We want some sunshine. And I think a lot of our thoughts and dreams, maybe even today, will be about how to create a more pleasant season in our lives. But the verse tells us that there's something else to figure in. That seasons can come and go, but if idle concerns don't cloud our mind, then this can become, whatever the season is, can become the happiest season. In any season, right now, this one can be the best one. Even a day with low and heavy clouds, that season, that spacious place, aspect, is waiting to be discovered. Uman famously said, every day is a good day. And no matter what the season, if we know this ordinary mind of ours, this most ordinary, if we can shed the rest, then, and meet it, meet the day, we can have a different experience of it. Like the poem says, we can see the beauty in every season and respond to it fresh in a way that helps not just us, but everybody else. That really is the promise of Zen, I think. That we can respond differently to every season, to all kinds of circumstances, but we'll only get there, we'll only understand that, really feel it. Not by thinking about, oh, I should deal with this this way and this this way, but by letting it all go, by shedding everything, and finding our most basic, most ordinary mind that I promise is there.
This podcast has been brought to you by the Puget Sound Zen Center. Thanks so much for listening. To learn more about our community, you can visit our website at pszc.org.